This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. The response to the coronavirus has been led by Jay Inslee, which makes sense because he's the governor, but it has the Republicans feeling left out. So let's talk with Senate Republican leader Mark Schessler of Ritzville, who would like to see a special session, and tell us how that would help.
Well, I think the reason it's needed is whether you are in a blue district or a red district, you have an elected representative who normally makes spending decisions for you. This governor has spent over $2 billion in CARES Act money without the direct involvement of the people's elected representatives. The other thing I've learned during 28 years in the legislature, no one caucus, individual, or party has the market cornered on good ideas.
But give me some of those ideas. What kinds of things would you be proposing to the governor or trying to pass in a special session?
The first thing we want to do is do something with the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. We can't wait for the other Washington to rescue us. Then we look at what else can we do. For example, could we not suspend liquor license fees for the next year? We could look at making some of the rules the governor has implemented by emergency permanent. Because as a Republican, I think some of them are good. I don't agree with all, but I think some merit becoming law.
The current reimposition of some of these restrictions, are you in agreement with the governor on those?
No, I disagree with the governor on these because we've seen, for example, tribal casinos that are running restaurants, gaming, and they're not spreaders in their communities. The hospitality industry made very significant offers to the administration not to do what they did. And the industry wasn't listened to, even though it was less than 1% of the cases originating in those restaurants.
So you believe that the restaurants should be allowed to remain open then?
I believe that they should be open. They should adjust their seating, their rules, and be contributing to the solution. But instead, they weren't given a chance. They were told it's our way or the highway, and these hardworking folks are going to be laid off with no special unemployment benefits awaiting them, and there's no guarantees it won't be extended through Christmas. A lot of these people work their tail ends off, and it isn't the $15 or $18 an hour they make. A lot of tips go into it, and it isn't the same when you're just doing curbside pickups.
Would there have been a way of creating some sort of bailout program for the restaurant industry before imposing the new lockdown?
Well, if we had the chance to work together, we also had some tremendous news on the budget today. And I think that revenue forecast today combined with lower caseloads just recently combines to give us some flexibility in budgets that we didn't have before, that we could be looking at how to help the hospitality industry, but also others. We can't just blame the other Washington for our problems. We have to step in and do some things for ourselves and do them sooner rather than later.
Is there going to be a need for some kind of new tax to pay for all the stuff that we're doing to handle COVID?
No, I think it's really not necessary. Some would say that in times of record revenue growth like the last 2 years, you got to raise taxes. When we were at the bottom of the economic cycle with COVID, some said we got to raise taxes. So for some, any time is a good time to raise taxes. It's always good. It's always needed. That really isn't the case.
So people who are wealthy have done fine, and yet, of course, their taxes won't change because we don't allow that. And that's probably going to bring some more pressure for some kind of tax linked to income. I'm guessing that's a non-starter for you.
Well, it is for me because at the end of the day, that's one of the economic development advantages we have is not having income tax on capital gains or a flat out income tax. Our Commerce Department brags about it. But you look, who has benefited from Governor Inslee's lockdown of the state? The biggest corporations, the biggest corporate retailers, they've benefited. It hasn't been Main Street in Spokane or Bellevue. It's been the biggest that have benefited.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they have benefited and you acknowledge that, why not make them pay?
well, why do these policies only benefit those mega employers? And, you know, they find a lot of ways out of it. For example, when the B&O tax on services was passed just last year, the three biggest tech companies in the state capped their taxes. My accountant didn't get to cap his. My doctor couldn't. My veterinarian couldn't. So on and so forth. They couldn't cap their taxes, but the majority party allowed Amazon, Microsoft, and Google to limit their exposure to taxes. Now, there's something wrong with that. If you're going to raise B&O taxes, well, okay, everybody, but big business got a pass while small and medium companies in the state paid the freight.
Well, then maybe it's up to the Republicans to teach big business a lesson then.
Well, you know, I think if this came up again, I think we'd take a closer look at it. But we're not here to punish people. We're here to rise all boats. I don't feel like being punitive. I feel like growing the economy. I started on that 28 years ago, and I don't think I'll change the rest of my career. Growing the economy is the best solution.
Leader of the Republicans in the state Senate, Mark Schessler. As the state financial situation improves slightly, one industry group is formally asking the governor to rethink new COVID restrictions before the damage is done to small business and their workers. Here's Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott.
The concern?
Everybody is very scared for what this means for their livelihood.
Thousands of servers like Suzanne out of work for the second time after the restaurant she works at shut down yesterday due to new restrictions. Or this group of bar staff in the same situation.
My base unemployment is $200 a week.
See? It's like she's $229.
Like, I want people to be safe, but I also, like, need to pay rent.
I don't know that I'll have a job to come back to, and it scares me.
The Washington Hospitality Association says that doesn't even account for the businesses that employ them, many of which are not going to survive this fresh round of restrictions. Governor Inslee saying this week he understands, but stressed the strict rules for bars and restaurants banning indoor dining are necessary.
We know that restaurants are the number one non-health care setting for COVID outbreaks in our state.
The WHA strongly disagrees. In a letter formally requesting Inslee reconsider the restrictions, they point to several months of data in Clark, Walla Walla, and Pierce counties, they say, shows that that is not the case and that social gatherings are to blame. They argue that's especially a big problem at the holidays, if you look at previous trends and after various holidays this year. But Inslee's staff tells the Seattle Times the data that the WHA is citing doesn't paint a full picture, especially because voluntary contact tracing is limited in the restaurant and bar industry and only focuses on staff. And if a customer does get COVID, it's not always attributed to that bar or restaurant, as there are multiple potential sources of infection. King County Public Health puts social gatherings at the top spot for spread right now, with restaurants and bars the second most frequently reported source of potential COVID-19 exposure. There have been 83 outbreaks linked to restaurants since the start of the pandemic, 38 of them in the last 60 days. Still, the WHA insists it's being unfairly targeted and wants the governor to rethink the order, pointing to an already decimated industry that's now going to leave 100,000 people out of work right before the holidays. But during the state's latest economic and revenue forecast for the state yesterday, forecaster Steve Lurch said it won't be that bad.
Probably on the order of 55,000 would be sort of the upper limit impact of those restrictions.
And while the state's financial outlook was slightly better than expected due to higher collections that are expected to bring in $900 million more than originally thought through mid-2023, the outlook was not as rosy for workers, with hits to personal income growth and employment before this latest round of restrictions was even considered, one of many uncertainties forecasters admit surround their projections. That led to heated debate over the need to call a special session, with Democratic Senator Christine Rolfes, lead budget writer in the Senate, saying,
"As the state government doesn't print money, the federal government prints money. So if we were to do any additional stimulus or any additional assistance to small business in this state, we'd be cutting services to other people in order to do that. It's a whole different ballgame."
But Republican Senator John Braun,
"Why are we insistent on, we're calling the federal government names, and believe me, I got no love for our federal government, but they put out $6 or $7 trillion in response to the pandemic, unprecedented in our country's history. And yes, they haven't done another one because they don't want to print more money that our children and our grandchildren have to pay back. But why aren't we thankful for the help we've gotten and get off our hands and do something about our situation instead of relying on hope?
Republicans have been critical for months over Inslee refusing to bring them back to Olympia to address the pandemic. And this week, those calls again pouring in, with Republicans working on multiple proposals to help ease the hit on businesses and workers. But Inslee has pointed to $50 million he's committed in grants and loans to help businesses and workers, but there's so far been not many details. Now, a draft proposal released yesterday from the Office of Financial Management shows the plan is to use $20 million for expenses, including rent, mortgage, and utility assistance, to help prevent permanent closure of businesses. The Department of Commerce, it says, will prioritize businesses owned by Black, Indigenous, and people of color. The other $30 million will be distributed as loans. Spokesman for the governor's office tells The Times it'll be a mid- to long-term recovery tool, and the size of it will ultimately depend on how much funding they can leverage from private investors and banks, with a goal that they expect to be about $100 million.
So, Hannah, is that going to be enough to actually save these businesses? Do we know?
No. Well, not according to the Washington Hospitality Association, which says, it would barely scratch the surface of what they estimate to be more than $1 billion in need at the very minimum.
Seattle has its own loan program, right? You can get a loan up to $10,000?
It does. It does for businesses. And I don't know exactly how much that would help for individual businesses. I know it's done some good. And I believe the mayor is currently working on some possible other actions that she can do to help in that situation. But again, it's a pretty astronomical amount. And it doesn't do a lot to address the unemployment, the lack of those federal dollars for the unemployment extensions that are going to expire, or that extra $600 everybody had the first time around. There's really no answer for that, other than we're waiting on the federal government to do something with a stimulus plan that the governor said the other day is not likely to happen until January, when Joe Biden takes over. And that's a long time for these folks.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing, too. I talked with Senator Mark Chesler yesterday, who leads Republicans in the Senate. He doesn't think anything's going to happen until after that Georgia special election, because that's got Congress paralyzed. And he's in touch with, the delegation, and I guess has tried to lobby for some action there, but without success. So these ideas that the Republicans are talking about, and the things they would like to bring up in a special session or the regular session, the only concrete one I've heard so far is to give relief from the state, liquor tax or license fees or something, but that didn't sound like it would make much of a difference.
And I think they're more geared towards businesses. I think it's Drew McEwen is working on three or four. One is the liquor one you just mentioned, and then there's a B&O tax, a couple of different ones that deal with B&O taxes that I know of. And I can't recall what the other one is off the top of my head, but they are mostly geared toward businesses. Again, not a lot that can be done for the individual workers. So this draft plan from Commerce that we're supposed to hear officially from the governor on either today or tomorrow, it is going to do maybe some, add to the rental assistance program that they have, mm-hmm. and maybe give some help with utilities, both for businesses and for individuals, it sounds like. I don't know how much that helps. Keeps you in the house, I guess.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. Given that this was all predicted, right? I mean, we spent the whole summer hearing warnings about the second surge, which is going to happen in the winter. First, the main problem was going to be the combination with the flu, right? Because we're getting into flu season again. And there were warnings coming from the governor's office that we could again see this surge. And it has actually come true. But is there any reason why, when they were so sure this was going to happen, that a relief program wasn't put in place first so that we wouldn't have this second crisis?
Well, you'll hear the same thing from the governor as you have the entire pandemic, is that this is up to the federal government. He's been waiting forever and pushing for this new stimulus, more relief from the federal government. That's the line that you will hear across the board, really, from most Democrats that I've talked to in the last couple of weeks. And it's what the governor has been saying all along. It's, every time we hear the Republicans say we need a special session to get back in there, the Democrats say there's no need right now. The governor can act by executive order. And if we go back to the legislative session, everybody's just going to be, arguing and nothing's going to get done. What's the point? It's the federal government's responsibility. But they're not doing anything. So that leaves us where we are. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
Time for your daily dose of kindness, sponsored by Mike Novak and listwithnovak.com. Food scarcity is a reality that many people face on a daily basis, not knowing where their next meal is coming from. It's been especially hard during the pandemic with businesses closing. Another round of layoffs, it seems, we're hearing about every day. In Washington, it's predicted that 1 in 4 people won't have enough food this winter. In fact, we just heard from Northwest Harvest on the issue.
We've seen more than a doubling of need for food resources just from the previous year.
And there are a number of food drives today and coming up this weekend I'll tell you about, but the food scarcity happening across the country. In Concord, New Hampshire, though, there hasn't been a scarcity of kindness. WMUR News spoke with a woman who's been buying groceries for many people.
I paid for that person, and then I said, okay, one more, and I ended up paying for like 8 people's groceries.
As a mother of 3, Brandy is used to taking care of others, but one day last week she was at the grocery store and on a whim decided to pick up the tab for those strangers, racking up a bill of more than $600.
With the pandemic and everything and all the election stuff, you know, I just wanted to bring smiles to people's faces.
Word of her good deed got out when a cashier snapped a picture of her, posted it on social media. Brandy says she's not rich, but she just wanted to give back after the community recently held a parade and mailed presents for her 7-year-old son's birthday. She says because of the pandemic, he thought that he wasn't going to get much of a celebration for his birthday, but the community came through.
And what did you say your birthday was?
Epic.
Yeah, epic.
Brandy didn't stop there. She was back at the grocery store days later buying groceries for someone else.
She was crying and she said, thank you so much. You don't understand what this means to me. You know, it's so hard to reach out and ask for help.
It is tough to ask for help, but many people need it. She says she's doing okay now, but she knows what it's like to be in need.
We've been on both ends of the spectrum, so to speak. And it's not a good feeling when you don't know where you're going to get food for your kids.
And to celebrate for Thanksgiving, she's buying dinner for 2 families, so she can't be stopped. Now, if you're feeling inspired to give back this season, as I said, Northwest Harvest just told us about the unprecedented need that they're seeing with people heading into food banks, and they're looking for donations. Also today, Lakewood Police are collecting food at their police stations as part of the annual Fallen Officer Food Drive. And in Marysville, firefighters are raising money for food banks on a website, GoFundMe. So I'm sure you can just search Marysville Firefighters on GoFundMe for that.
Now from the Gian Ursula Show, weekdays 9 to noon, here is G. Scott. Tonight, it's the Seahawks versus the Arizona Cardinals. I have very, very bad memories of Seahawks-Cardinals games. But there's the statistical thing which says that Russell Wilson has never lost 3 games in a row, and therefore he can't possibly lose tonight. Personally, I think that's a risky assumption to make, but you're the expert, so tell us.
I'm going to go ahead and go with that. When it comes to betting on someone who is facing adversity, I'm going to go ahead and put my money on Russell. And I'm not just saying that. There has been years of proof to support that. From the time that that young man has stepped onto the field for the Seattle Seahawks in 2012, it's actually before he stepped on the field when he was a 3rd-round pick and the starter was going to be Matt Flynn, and the work that he put in to become the starter in that year and in everything that he's done for this franchise ever since. You know, it's amazing. The last couple weeks, you know, there are a lot of people, oh, something's up with Russell. Russell's going down. I just want people to remember, like, yeah, this team has always, every year, like even the year they won the Super Bowl, when they went 13-3, they have faced adversity. Maybe there's things that have been that you see, but there's surely been a lot of things that you don't see. But the one thing that's for sure is Russell Wilson has not missed a game or a practice in all of those years, where you see all the other teams with quarterbacks and having these different quarterbacks every single game and or season. Number 3, you can always count on. So as far as this game right here, I think this game comes down to, I think the fans, the NFL fans, are everybody's on the edge of their seat because it's Kyler Murray against Russell Wilson. You can tell how the NFL is really promoting Kyler Murray right now. I mean, he is fun to watch, no question about it. This is one of the top teams in the NFL that will take place tonight. But at the same time, I'm going to bet on the Seahawks. I'm going to bet on the Seahawks because, A, number one, number three, Russell Wilson, he's a winner. Two, there's still Pete Carroll, and he's a magician as being a coach. And three, it's primetime football, baby. It's Thursday night football. They don't lose. They don't lose, and they don't lose three in a row.
They don't lose on primetime football?
I mean, they've lost.
Oh, I'm just checking. I need the facts, G. What's the injury report, though? Because injuries have really done it. I'm surprised people blame Russell for some of the mistakes. I tend to blame the people around him. But what's the injury report, and will he be protected?
Oh, Colleen, we ain't got to talk about details, but that's what you like. You like details because you cross T's and dot I's. Well, on the injury front, Shaquille Griffin, he's still out. Shaquille Griffin, by the way, is a cornerback, plays the same position that Richard Sherman played back in the day. He's out, so he is a starter who's really good. The starting center, the one who snaps the ball to Russell, Ethan Posick, he's going to be out. So they are still dealing with a little bit of injury, but there is a good chance that Chris Carson comes back. And now here's the thing that's kind of been a little sketchy now. Tyler Lockett, number 16, kind of been on a little, battling a little knee thing. So they're saying he's questionable. So that's
he's a miracle worker.
You know what I mean? Like Tyler Lockett is that guy. So I got to tell you, I'm not nervous about today. Usually I'm nervous about every Seahawk game, but I'm excited about today. I'm excited for and I don't know if I'm going to be wrong or right, whatever, but I'm just excited to see Russell and the Seahawks, who over the last couple weeks have been facing adversity from the fan base and the NFL. And also on the line right now tonight is the MVP race, right? Russell has to get the Seahawks have to get this game in order for Russell
this
to get
back. This is a must-win is what you're saying.
No.
This is another must-win. Yes, it is. You said that.
No. I said MVP race. As far as must, I know, not must-win, but to get back in the MVP race, yes, it is a must-win.
All right. G. Scott joins Ursula at 9 o'clock. Thanks, G.
See you guys.
We last heard from Senate Republican Leader Mark Chesler in the 7 o'clock hour about why he wants a special session to get both sides involved regarding Governor Inslee's COVID restrictions. But we also talked about other things, including how to make up for students' lost time in the classroom. I know at one point you were talking about starting schools in August to make up for lost time. What should be done about making up for the time lost in schools now that we're way past August?
Well, I think that getting the kids back in school sooner, longer, is paramount. I'm the grandfather of three young kids. Two of my grandchildren have a dual educator household. My other granddaughter is pretty bright. Mom and dad do a good job, and they have grandma. But think of all the kids that don't have two-parent households and a grandma with time to help. We're going to have to make up for that lost time sooner or later, because the numbers I'm hearing about the failure rate is staggering. Paramount duty of the state is education, and we can't be shortchanging the hours and days year after year. It simply will cripple education in this state.
What do you do about that then?
Well, we may have to go into a longer school year. If we see the pandemic slowing, we might have to say, you know, we've had a lot of vacation time. Maybe we don't need that spring break that we've always had. Maybe we can shorten it up. But we haven't had the contact with our educators, with our kids, and that system is shortchanged, not for lack of money, but for sheer lack of hours and contact for those children.
So back to the COVID problem. We're right in the thick of it again. You've said that you support many of these measures, although you feel that the restaurants needed to get more notice. Is there any possibility of some kind of joint announcement between between Republican leaders and the governor to convince those parts of the state that still don't seem to quite believe it? I mean, right in the latest super spreader case is in your area, in Ritzville there, with that that now notorious wedding reception.
Let's get the facts about it.
Yeah,
it was It was nearly 20 miles away from Ritzville. It wasn't like we were having it in my backyard here. And it involved largely people from Moses Lake and Othello, two side-by-side counties. And it wasn't a smart decision having that large event. As far as what we could do together, you know, in 9 months, the conversations we've had with the executive branch is the governor calling up and telling us what he's going to do, and he can check the box and move on. That isn't the way we finished last session. We finished last session on a high note, all four corners working together on public health funding, unemployment insurance funding. We showed we can work together, but just calling up and saying, this is what's going to happen, really doesn't bring people to the table and bring them together.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Do you see any possibility of, at some point, one of these COVID announcements would be a joint announcement between the governor and you or the other Republican leaders?
I believe if we were actually involved in developing that decision, of course. But if you're not involved in developing the solution, you're told this is the way it's going to be, you're not likely to get that help.
What's your sense of how popular the vaccine will be in your part of the state? Is there trust in the vaccine?
I'm concerned about the fact that there is people that doubt it, not just Republicans, not just Eastern Washington. There's a serious cross-section of people that doubt it, and that's troubling. And I think that's where some cooperation is going to be necessary from all parties, that if this is ready to go, that we work together on it. A mandate's not going to do it, but inspirational leadership will.
So you would foresee perhaps a joint announcement on encouraging people to take the vaccine when it becomes available?
Well, if we see that it's met the tests, I think that's a very realistic option. But a phone call saying, hey, we ought to do this, or by the way, I'm doing it, doesn't generate that. It requires a certain amount of cooperation. Let's go back, Dave, to the Connecting Washington transportation package. Two-thirds of the Senate voted for largest transportation package in history. You don't get there by telling people my way or the highway. And because of that, the backlash wasn't there. There was no referendum to repeal those transportation taxes. I ran unopposed after voting for a gas tax in the 9th district because we had real reforms. We had real buy-in. That's how you get things done.
Senate Republican leader Mark Shessler. A Seattle music venue that's been around for 30 years is closing its doors, but it's going to be opening up again right down the street. And with that story, here is Rachel Bell.
The Crocodile Cafe opened in Seattle in 1991, and the Posies were the first band to play there. Since then, the small Belltown venue has become internationally famous, hosting bands like Nirvana and Pearl Jam when they were just starting out.
The Beastie Boys played there. Billie Eilish played there not too long ago. I saw R.E.M. there. Oh, I just remembered that one. I saw R.E.M. play. They were massive at that time. I don't know
what you mean. That is legendary Seattle DJ Marco Collins, a DJ at KEXP who was the first in the world to play bands like Nirvana, Weezer, and Beck back when he was a DJ on 107.7 The End in the heart of the grunge era.
And I'm on the phone with Courtney Love, who's got a couple of bones to pick.
No, my bones are fine. I'm happy.
I moved here in 1991, the same year that the Crocodile started, and it quickly became a place that it was important for up-and-coming bands to play. It was one of the only venues that would support independent rock.
But this week, the Crocodile announced that it's moving. The building's owner refused to renew their lease or sell the building to the club's owners. But to be clear, the Crocodile is not closing. It's only moving a few blocks away. And the owners have big plans during a time when all venues are shuttered with no end in sight.
Finally, some good news, you know.
The Croc is moving into the old El Gaucho building, which, according to the Seattle Times, has a solid rock and roll past. Before the steakhouse opened in 1996, bands like Radiohead, Korn, and Bikini Kill all played at what was called the Sailors Union of the Pacific Hall. And there's an 18-room hotel upstairs.
I'm excited. I think it's fantastic. Being that they're going to have three potential stages, a comedy stage, a larger venue, which is 100 more people than they already had, and then a smaller stage like a Barboza, I think it's amazing. And then the hotel.
I feel like this is the first piece of good news. Like when I first saw just a quick headline like the Crocodile closing, you're like, no. And it's like, oh, but it's moving and it's moving to a cool venue. And
I think it's really good news. And the fact that it's still in Belltown kind of holds on to that original essence. They'll be able to get bigger bands to play that venue and then they can stay upstairs. I don't know why I'm so excited about the hotel part.
Because we're old and we just want to go to sleep after a show.
Or maybe they'll even stream the show into your bedroom. So as old people, we don't really ever have to leave the hotel room.
According to the Seattle Times, the plan is to open the hotel in February, the bar in March, and they are hopeful that live music will return by September 2021. The club's investor group includes Alice in Chains drummer Sean Kinney and Susan Silver, former manager of Alice in Chains and Soundgarden. And hopefully the new venue will be home to many more young musicians just getting their start.
When we started playing Beck at the end, he had barely signed his deal with Geffen. And because the record got so big in Seattle, Loser, we decided to fly back up to do a couple of shows. I booked 21 and Up show at the Crocodile. Now, keep in mind, at that time, Beck was nothing more than a busker. He was an acoustic artist that just added some beats. But for Loser, I just remember watching the show and being mortified for him. He had a little toy drum machine, and the drum machine broke. His little toy broke. So he had to do Loser acoustic, and he ended up getting booed at the Crocodile. Pretty much getting booed off the stage. I'm a loser, baby.
Well, that's kind of a depressing lyric to close on. But other than that, it's really encouraging to think that Seattle might actually have a nightlife again.
I know. I think that it's pretty amazing that they do have to put quite a bit of money into this new venue and that there is money available at this point. Yeah. You know, everyone being closed for 9 months. Places like that are not like restaurants. They have no choice to do anything like takeout. And I heard a little birdie tell me, I won't name any names, but another music venue in town, I learned how much their monthly rent is. $50,000 a month.
Whoa.
So, you know, all these places kind of sitting vacant, I know they're not doing well. So this is very encouraging. I hope that live music is back in September of 2021.
Live music coming back in September of 20 seems like a long time, but of course, the way the months have been passing, maybe not. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.